I have no disclosures to make because nobody makes any money under your child abuse. If any of you know a solution to that, I'd be happy to hear it. I'm going to switch this a little bit. Instead of talking about kind of cases that are known and measured, what we're going to be, approach a different way of doing it, which is I'm going to talk about ISTHCAM, the International Society for the Prevention of Child Abuse and Neglect, child abuse screening tools, the ICAS instruments. There have been two international studies or reports on the problem of child abuse and neglect. In 2002, the World Report on Violence and Health had a chapter on child maltreatment, another one actually, I think, about partner violence. And then in 2006, the Secretary General of the UN had commissioned a study that looked at children in violence. And those two studies together examined the problem and came to, and the people were pulling together, pulled their hair out because data were hard to come by internationally. And so one of the recommendations in both reports actually was to enhance the capacity for collecting data on violence related to children. The World Report on Violence and Health noted that current knowledge was very limited, that data were compromised by different measures, different definitions. Many countries issued reports that mixed what happened in the school and what happened at home together. Others considered only the home. They use different kinds of samples. They do cross-sectional surveys of a fourth grade, for instance, in Romania, and come up with some numbers related to that. Others used more complex designs or used perspectives in one little city or one part of the city. So it's very difficult to draw any kind of overall sense of what the burden of the problem is internationally around the world on this part. And the other thing that there's a lot of lack of recognition that when some people were talking about incidence, other people were talking about prevalence, and that those two numbers aren't the same, and that was confusing things. But I will give you one example of a study that I was involved in, and starting in the 90s, called the World Survey of Abuse in Family Environment. This is a collaborative project in six countries in which we developed a common core instrument about asking mothers. And we only asked mothers because it was also a family violence module as well. And we asked them, and the way we processed, we selected it, we went to a household that was randomly selected, and then randomly selected a child within that household, and all the discipline questions were asked about that child, so that we would end up having some data about different age children. The samples were designed to be population-based to the extent limited by the resources available, and they ranged from $800,000 to do the survey in India to about $10,000 to do the survey in Egypt, and so very different amounts of money. There also had to be very careful attention to issues of ethics and privacy and safety, because going in many countries and asking women about their exposures to violence and what's happened to their kids puts not only the interviewer at risk, but the woman at risk. And so there was we actually even had a sham interview that was pulled out if somebody else came into the room to sort of asking about embarrassing things like, when was your last menstrual period, that was designed to drive the, whoever the other person that came in out of the room. And just to show you how that worked, you can see that this is Brazil, Chile, Egypt. We broke the Indian sample into three different groups, the Philippines and the US. And you can see that spanking ranges from a high of close to 80% down to about 30% in different communities. Spanking with an object, a little more uniformity because the rates were all a little bit lower, but between the low 20s in the United States and in Chile to up to, in Indian urban areas, it was about 58%. And you can see hitting with an object elsewhere in the body and slapping on the face were quite common. In fact, in India, spanking on the face was more common than spanking. Slapping on the face was more common than spanking in some parts of India. So ISPCAN was a part of the advisory committee for the Secretary General's study and decided to go ahead and take on the task of coming up with common set instruments. And they decided that there was a need for instruments to be developed that looked at measures child maltreatment internationally that needed to be rights-based, reliable and valid, globally useful, culturally sensitive, and easily translated. And the perspective also was that you couldn't use official statistics because most countries didn't have mechanisms for reporting or collecting official statistics. So these would be survey-based instruments. There was an intention for having to try to be standardized for comparison of data, but also flexible enough to allow for subject comfort, to allow for inclusion of forms of discipline that might be useful in one, that might be common in one country and not the other. We collected 120 scientists in 40 countries to be involved in this. First, it was about 40 scientists that collected together at the ISPCAN International Meeting in Brisbane. who actually sat down and broke into three groups and designed draft instruments that then were refined electronically in email back and forth, and then the Delphi process of review was done with 120 scientists. And I'll tell you about two of the instruments in a little more detail. There is ample evidence using the parent-child conflict tactic scale that parents will reveal pretty sensitive information on interviews. That we know in the World Safe Studies, we used a variation of the parent-child conflict tactic scale, and the rates that we came up with in North Carolina for forms of different abuse were between 10 and 40 times more common than official reports. So the rates range for overall harsh physical punishment about 4.5%, child sexual abuse 2%, and the rate officially in North Carolina is 0.12% for sexual abuse. The other reason for going after the parents was that we thought the parents would understand informed consent. Parents are present, presumably, at the time abuse occurs, if you're asking about child maltreatment in the home. And that using the model parent-child conflict tactic scale, questions were asked in the context of child rearing. And sample items, and this has been translated now into, I believe, 9 languages. It starts off with a kind of permissive statement that all adults use certain methods to teach their children the right behavior or to address a behavior problem. I'll read various methods that might be used, and I want you to tell me how often you, and then they also separate out husband or partner, use this with the child's name in the last year. And things like when range from explained why something was wrong, shook him or her, hit him or her on the buttocks with an object, stretches a stick, broom, or belt, threatened to leave or abandon him or her. There are total 36 discipline questions in the instrument. There also is an ICAST-C, which is an instrument given directly to children. Now, this was a little controversial. We had some interesting discussions with our scientists around the world about consent for participation in research, whether children understand it. Child abuse, again, is a private act, and often only two people know what happened. One is the child and the other is the parent. And so the idea was that we would develop an instrument that would collect data from the children. Our colleagues who were members of the countries where they had signed the Commission on the Rights of the Rights of the Child contract argued that children shouldn't be prohibited from giving information by parental consent issues that would get in the way from a child rights perspective. But there's also the research ethics of being able to get informed consent from parents and prospective persons. We actually held in 1995 a conference addressing children, directly asking children about consent, and ended up publishing in the Journal of Interpersonal Violence. And the consensus among experts was that you couldn't really go below age 10 and expect the children to have informed consent. And we actually, in our own work, have 6-year experience then at the time we did this of asking children about what they had done, what happened to them. And they actually did, in fact, tell us about far more things that were happening than their parents had told us or that we knew from social service records. And in fact, we also found in our longitudinal study called LongScan that child well-being was better predicted by what the kids were telling us than either by official statistics. So we thought that this was an important piece. We also have a retrospective version. This came out of a conversation with a couple different experts. David Chadwick and Murray Strauss both talked in the different kinds of childhood exit interview. Sometimes the issues of informed consent and reporting could be solved by waiting until the child was 18 and then asking retrospectively about what their childhood was like. So the young adults would give a retrospective view of the childhood. And there might be in some informed process that might happen here, whereas a younger child might be telling you about every little insult that they thought was unfair, like not being able to go out to visit with a friend or something, that by asking young adults they get a more informed perspective on what was really serious and what wasn't. The loss, however, is that things that happen to young children may not be remembered. So the parent version was piloted in these countries: Colombia, Democratic Republic of Congo, Egypt, India, Lebanon, Malaysia, and Russia. And in Russia, they did clinic, hospital, and school samples. The task, after this was developed, we looked for volunteers to pilot each of the samples, and the countries stepped forward. We didn't have a lot of money to support them to do this, but countries stepped forward and said we could do this. We ended up limiting the sampling for the pilot study to just a convenient sample of for the parents of 100 to 120 parents, and asked them to do that in any group administration if they could, or to make it as simple as possible. and so these countries all stepped forward and did this. And this is a sample of some of the data. You can see that asking these parents, and these are not representative samples for each of these countries, but and I don't know why the other countries' names disappeared off the bottom of the screen, but you can see that timeout, shaking a kid older than two, spanking and beating up, there's a fair amount of variation among samples in terms of that. And beating up was rarer than some of the other forms, and timeout is something that has fairly dramatic fluctuations in terms of where people's conception of that. In terms of missing values, people didn't have any trouble answering the question, very low frequency in all questions for the primary respondent. A lot more missing values when we asked about when the question was continued about another caretaker in the home, what they've done. Shaking about 1% missing value, and sexual touch by an adult about 2%, but the others are less than that. The child instrument was broken up into two sub-instruments because it became so long the people that were writing it were so in love with the items, and they wouldn't give up any of them. So we ended up breaking a child home instrument for asking about children at home, and then a separate instrument for children in institutional settings, so children in orphanages or foster care or jails or prisons or even residential schools. And that was piloted in Colombia, Iceland, Russia, and India. 55% of the children were adults. Reported physical victimization, 66% across the four countries reported psychological victimization, 18% sexual victimization, and the rates were highest in Russia and lowest in Iceland. Iceland, it's illegal to use corporal punishment on your kids, but the kids told us about corporal punishment. And the alphas for these were pretty acceptable, 0.685 to 0.855, with missing values again being relatively infrequent. And just to show you a little bit of what the kids told us, witness IPV in response to the question you asked before was actually the highest reported thing of any in each of the countries for what they saw. 40% of Colombian kids, 60% of Indian kids, 50% of the Russian kids, and even 10% of the Iceland kids. But you can see that, I gave the spank rates. So witness IPV was still common in all countries. You can see the spanking, even the country of Iceland, where corporal punishment is illegal, about 10% of households are still spanking their kids. So we're getting reports of things that clearly are prescribed by society. And hit with an object, you can see, is a fair amount of variation on that as well. And burning is fortunately relatively uncommon. The instrument has lots more questions, but I just picked a few sample ones to show you. So in conclusion, we have three instruments, the ICAS-P for parent, the R for retrospective, and the C, and I didn't give you the retrospective, mostly because I was worried that ran out of time. They all appear to have face validity, and they produce patterns of data that are comparable to what other studies have shown, but in higher rates. More validation studies are needed. I now know that these instruments have already been used in a national study in South Africa, and have been in Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Tanzania, Nigeria, and I just got an inquiry from Turkey, are all planning national surveys to use these instruments to collect data for their report to the Committee on the Rights of the Child in Geneva for their country reports. More validation studies, I think, are clearly needed. They query about a variety of potentially aversive and positive parenting behaviors in child victimizations, but they don't capture the whole range of child experience, and there will be variations. In our earlier work that we did with the World Safe Project, we used focus groups in different countries to see what other things we were missing. And focus group said we didn't capture the children having their hands or feet tied together, being hung either right side up or upside down from the wall. And after we got over the shock of that suggestion, we actually queried in that and found that the rates were exceedingly low for that. It was one of the things the focus group thought was, I guess it was salacious and kind of dramatic, and so the focus group really kind of emphasized that this is something we had to ask about, and the good news was that not very many people are hanging their kids up off the ground with their wrists or ankles tied together. It was an interesting lesson about kind of the danger of focus groups of magnifying some things that are really not terribly important. But these look like they're there. Some countries will be doing more of the validation work now as we get going on this. And I can announce that the December issue of Child Abuse and Neglect is going to have the three articles describing these instruments coming out, so that it'll be out, probably, actually the electronic version's out now, but the paper version will be out in a few weeks.
Got some time.
So all these instruments, the field guides, the data entry templates are available from, actually, it's not ISPCAN, it's ISPCAN, International Society for Prevention of Child Abuse and Neglect, sorry for the typo. And it's actually, it got moved to, from the time I did the slides, it got moved to the December date, from the November date for publication. And happy to take questions? Thank you. So, my turn.
Curiosity question. I was trying to put in a survey some questions to mothers about their parenting practices that included corporal punishment, some other things. And the IRB gave us an incredibly hard time that we wound up calling, trying to remember exactly what is somebody in the federal IRB and OMB. And there was a conundrum, and the situation was, if you find out that a mother is doing very, very severe corporal punishment, which is indicative of abuse, then you have to, as a mandated reporter, you have to report. That was one. So they said, okay, the consent, you should say that, you know, that you are a mandated reporter. And then the IRB said, but you know something? That's going to invalidate your responses. And I'm wondering if you've come across this or how you've dealt with this.
Well, the survey we did in North Carolina as part of the earlier study, we did as anonymous random user dial. We structured it so that we used a survey research firm that would collect the data for us, and they actually, between the time the call was connected and the time we started the interview, if they agreed to do the interview, this phone number was then programmed to disappear from the screen and availability for the interviewer so that there, we had no identifying information to call back. And so that was before they gave us any information. So if they told us they didn't spank or they did spank or they did choke or didn't choke, the interviewer didn't have the information. We ran that by our Attorney General's office in the state and we ran it by our IRB and that worked. In other countries, it depends on the country, only three countries were willing to do the child instrument in part because of commitment to trying to help kids and not perceiving that they wanted to be in a position to know and not be able to respond. But in most of the other countries we dealt with, there wasn't an agency to report to. But all of the places that did the piloting were required to go through the CITI training on human subjects and had to have a policy about what they were going to do and give informed consent, and they all were required to have an IRB. The one country didn't have an IRB, we actually constituted a new IRB within ISPCAN for them to, with a bunch of investigators to review the protocol and make sure they were comfortable with what they did. So, good questions, important, and needed to be attentive. And the manual, actually, for the instruments really goes in great length about the ethics and having to set into place a requirement that there be an IRB.
Thank you.